Hello, 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 and welcome to Décolonisation le Vietnam, or if you wish, the history of Vietnam, and more precisely, the history of French Indochina. My name is Xavier Djamendour, and I published this series initially in French, as you may hear from my accent. That was a couple of years ago, and now I yielded to my English-speaking friends, and I hope that if you're interested in Vietnamese history, that you will enjoy the 26 upcoming episodes that will take us from the 18th, 19th century Vietnam to the Battle of Dien Bien Phu in 1954. But just before we get into it, I would like to make a preemptive apology to all the Vietnamese speakers out there. Why? Well, because I'm about to embark into a large-scale butchering of the pronunciation of Vietnamese names, of Vietnamese places, of everything Vietnamese. And for that, I'm sorry. So, without further ado, let us start with the first episode, Vietnam, What in a Name? The Red River Delta and the area around it, that's where we're going to start our journey. Why? Because the delta of the Red River is the cradle of Vietnamese civilization. That is where today's Vietnam traces its roots for thousands of years. And it is around 3000 BC that the earliest settlements appeared in that area. Agriculture took off, rich families and clans emerged, united into tribes, and even though there were not one unified political structure, the inhabitants of the delta participated into the Dong Son civilization that flourished from southern China to all Southeast Asia between the 6th century and the 1st century CE. Over time, a more centralized political entity appeared in the 3rd century BC in Koh Loa, not far from today's Hanoi. And it is likely that a local king took control of Koh Loa and united different tribes of the area into the new kingdom of Ao Lạc. But that kingdom of Ao Lạc did not last long, because then and there entered the Chinese Empire. Indeed, Ao Lạc was conquered in the 2nd century BC by a rogue Chinese general. Rogue towards the Chinese Empire, I mean. This dissident official seized Ao Lạc and created his own autonomous fiefdom, and he called it Southern Viet or Nam Viet. But this autonomy did not last either, because what did the empire do? You guessed it, the empire counterattacked. And just like that, Nam Viet was incorporated into the Chinese Empire. And from that moment on, despite a few periods of independence here and there, commenced 1,000 years of Chinese domination over what is now Northern Vietnam. The Chinese called the people of the Red River Delta the Viet, and they renamed the territory Jiaoxi. Jiaoxi becoming a province of the Chinese Empire. The Chinese brought with them many innovations. Think about chopsticks, for example. They brought as well Chinese characters to write their language. They brought irrigation techniques that enabled a significant increase of the production of rice. The Chinese brought as well military expertise. They brought political and administrative know-how. And finally, the Chinese brought new religions. Think of Buddhism, Taoism, Confucianism. In a nutshell, the Chinese influence of what is now Vietnam is massive. But if you go back to the times of Jiaoxi, when the Chinese colonized what is now North Vietnam, a new aristocracy emerged. And this is not different from any other colonizations. The natives start collaborating with the colonizers, and some of them become the elite of the new entity. In Jiaoxi, As a result of marriages between Chinese conquerors on one hand and indigenous noble families on the other hand, a new ruling class appeared. And this aristocracy was very involved in the affairs of the Chinese Empire. And until the 20th century, you could find Vietnamese scholars in the Chinese imperial apparatus. That being said, there were many conflicts, of course, because Jiaoxi was located at the edge of the empire. These conflicts often emerge when the people at the headquarters try to reassert their control over local elites and exert a more direct authority instead of relying on said elites. When that happened, there were revolts, such as the revolt of the Trung sisters, celebrated to this day in Vietnam, or the revolt of Lady Triệu, which I am going to tell you about now. And I'll quote here from the book Wars of Indochina by Philip Fronchini. Quote, "She was a tireless giant, exceptionally beautiful, with a voice as powerful as a temple gong and a very large bosom. After fleeing from her husband, she took the lead of a band of pirates who attacked the Chinese troops. When her brother, shocked by this behavior unworthy of a woman of a good family, when her brother tried to reason with her, she replied that she did not want to resign herself to household chores, but that she wanted to ride the wind, rid the country of foreigners, and save the people. The Chinese could not defeat her. She was only defeated when a traitor revealed to the Chinese that the lady had a phobia of anything dirty, impure, and obscene. So what did the Chinese do? They entered the next battle completely naked. That, of course, horrified Lady Triệu, who retreated with her army in disarray. To avoid capture, Lady Triệu committed suicide by throwing herself into a river." End quote. This account of Lady Triệu is not, let's say, 100% realistic. However, there was indeed a cycle of loose domination and crackdown until the 10th century Common Era, when there was a rebellion led by a civil servant serving the Chinese. This leader, Ngô Quyền, saw that there were a lot of dynastic struggle in China and that the Chinese Empire was distracted by domestic infighting. So he took advantage of that and seized power in Jiaoxi. But what happened when Ngô Quyền seized power? Well, the empire counterattacked, of course. An expeditionary force was sent to quash the rebellion, but this time, though, Ngô Quyền not only resisted the Chinese forces, but he even defeated them in 938 at the Battle of the Bạc Đằng River. Ngô Quyền then proclaimed himself king of the Đại Việt. After the death of Ngô Quyền, there were some power struggles, from which a new dynasty was born, the Li dynasty. The Li reigned from the 11th to the 13th century. They were then replaced by the Tran dynasty between the 13th and the 15th century. And it is thanks to the Li and to the Tran that Đại Việt got rid of some of its Chinese influence. For example, scholars attached to the two courts began writing a sort of Vietnamese national epic to legitimize the power of the dynasty in place over the country. What they did is that they purified that epic from as many Chinese elements as possible and tried to highlight a continuity between the power of the Li and the Tran and the legendary beginnings of the kingdom of Ao Lạc. Another thing to note about the Đại Việt is that it was an expansionist kingdom. From the 15th century onwards, Đại Việt undertook the conquest and the colonization of the Thai territories in the northeast, and most importantly, of the Kingdom of Champa at its southern border. The Kingdom of Champa was located on the central and southern coastal region of today's Vietnam. It lasted from the 2nd to the 17th century and would end up completely annexed by the Dai Viet. However, while the Dai Viet tried to expand towards the south, it was still threatened on its northern flank by the mighty Chinese Empire. In the 13th century, for example, the Chinese counterattacked again under the reign of the Yuan dynasty. But the Viet stood up and a new figure of resistance appeared, Tran Hung Dao. Tran Hung Dao put in place guerrilla tactics and repelled the troops of Kublai Khan. The cult of Tran Hung Dao is celebrated to this day as well in Vietnam, and it is often associated to his nemesis, the traitor Phan Nhan, who sold out to the Mongol invaders. Tran Hung Dao versus Phan Nhan. This hero-traitor dynamic will reappear again in the Vietnamese history. For example, during the French conquest in 19th century, but also after 1945, when the Viet Minh would smear its enemies with the insult Viet Zan, traitor to the Vietnamese homeland. Fast forward now to the 15th century, and there was a new Chinese invasion, this time under the Ming dynasty. And this time the Chinese had their way. Dai Viet was again put under Chinese rule and became Jiaoxi again, the 13th province of the empire. And this time the Chinese came in with a vengeance, and they imposed a very heavy-handed military rule. Basically, they tried to reset the Vietnamese clock to Chinese imperial time, as the historian Christopher Gosha puts it. Scores of Chinese bureaucrats who did not speak Vietnamese came in, and they pushed over the local leaders and their quote-unquote barbaric ways. They burned Dai Viet books and imposed direct political rule of the territory. Cultural assimilation was at its peak, and the territory was mercilessly exploited economically for the benefit of the Chinese emperor. And who was the new Vietnamese hero this time? Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce Le Loi, who fought a 10-year guerrilla war against the Chinese and managed to drive them back in 1428. Le Loi is the founder of the Le dynasty, and he established his capital in Dong Kinh. Dong Kinh is interesting because Dong Kinh will give Tonkin, or Tonkin, which is the name the French will give to the northern part of Indochina around Hanoi. The Le dynasty consolidated power in its hands and maintained the fundamentals of Vietnamese culture: the village commune, rice cultivation, and the defense against the North. One way the Le managed to centralize power was thanks to the adoption of Confucianism as a state doctrine. And as every regime needs an able civil service capable of enforcing its decrees, the Le introduced competitive exams for the recruitment of mandarins. These exams would be held continuously for 5 centuries and will only be abolished by the French in the early 20th century. The Le dynasty also pursued the colonial policies initiated by the Tran. The march towards the south started again, and Dai Viet increasingly encroached upon the Kingdom of Champa. In addition to that, new territories were conquered on the borders of Vietnam and present-day Laos. But that territorial expansion, combined with economic difficulties, led to the Le losing their grip on power. The Le were not toppled from the throne. But starting in the 17th century, two rival families emerged and started vying for power. Not one family prevailed upon the other, but they took control of different parts of Diviet. The Trinh family took control of the northern part of the Diviet, while the Nguyen family controlled the southern part of the territory. The Nguyen lords were the ones who completed the conquest of Champa and pushed so far as the Mekong Delta, where they colonized Khmer territories. So what we see in the 17th and 18th centuries is that there were two Diviets, and still no Vietnam, as you may have noticed. These two Diviets were engaged in a civil war against each other, as each family, the Trinh and the Nguyen, tried to submit the other. And I can't help but compare the 18th century to the period of 1954 to 1975, when North and South Vietnam were fighting each other. The difference, though, is that in the 18th century, one side did not prevail on the other. What happened is that a third actor came in and prevailed on both the Trinhs and the Nguyens. The third actor are the Tyson brothers. And these guys were incredibly successful. They started a rebellion in their village called Tyson, and next thing we know, they kicked the Nguyen out of their southern kingdom and submitted the Trinhs in the north and established a new dynasty. The most prominent of the brothers reigned briefly between 1788 and 1792 under the name Quang Trung. But this king, Quang Trung, died before having the time to consolidate his power. And after his death, his successors were unable to hold it together, leaving the empire weak and vulnerable. Too weak and disorganized, the successors of Quang Trung could not do anything to stop the rise of their awesome enemy, Nguyen An. This Nguyen prince had survived the massacre of his entire family by the Tysons. And just like in the movies, this prince, the only survivor of his family, made it his life mission to reconquer his kingdom and avenge his family. He was charismatic, he was patient, and he was tenacious. First, he tried to forge local and international alliances. For example, he befriended a French Catholic missionary, Monseigneur Pignot de Béarn, and sent his own son on an embassy to France with the French bishop. After that, he launched a war of reconquest and crushed the Tysons. He proclaimed himself sovereign of a unified empire from the Chinese border to the Mekong Delta. And for the first time, the country took on the shape of the East that we know today. Nguyen An was the founder of a new dynasty, and he took the name Gia Long. And Gia Long was the one who gave his empire the name Vietnam in 1802. The first thing Gia Long did was to join the Imperial Chinese Tributary System. That means a kind of Chinese Commonwealth, basically. And after that, he asked the Qing Emperor of China to rubber stamp his country's new name, Nam Viet, that symbolized the unification of the country. However, the Chinese emperor refused Gia Long's request because Nam Viet, as you may remember, was the name of that ancient kingdom. And the problem is that kingdom had territories that were now under the control of Qing China at the time. So, to avoid any diplomatic incident, Gia Long changed the name from Nam Viet to Vietnam, which was then agreed to by the Chinese. So 1802, After almost 2,000 years of history, that's when the name Vietnam appears at last. What is odd, though, is that the name Vietnam would not last. First of all, the Chinese continued to call the country Annam, meaning the colonies of the South. Secondly, in 1813, Tsa Long reverted to the term Dai Viet to talk about his empire. After that, Tsa Long's successor, Minh Mang, whom we'll talk about next week, changed the name of his empire to Dai Nam. And that is the term, Dai Nam, that would be used by emperors until 1945. And let's not talk yet about the French, who will cut the territory in three, Tonkin, Annam, and Cochinchin, and create a suprastructure called Indochina. We will get to that in due time. So to finish up today, let's try to answer the question we asked at the start, Vietnam, what in a name? And what I want to say first is that it is interesting that the anti-colonial fighters in the 20th century chose the name Vietnam and not Dai Nam or Dai Viet to talk about their homeland. The first reason, I think, why they chose the name of the kingdom proclaimed by Tsa Long is that it was the largest territory on which a Viet monarch ever ruled. So, you know, French people, our country is not Annam, Cochinchina, Tonkin. No, it is Vietnam, meaning the whole land from the Chinese border to the Mekong Delta. Secondly, as explained, though, by the scholar Phan Boi Chau in the 20th century, Vietnam is not only a land, but it is also a people. The Viet people, who had often been conquered by the Chinese in their cradle of the Red River, but the Viet people who were also conquerors and who gradually submitted the other inhabitants of the Indochinese peninsula, whether they were Chams, Thais, Jarais, or Khmers. And in doing so, the Viet often fought between themselves for the territory, as shown by the civil wars between the Trinh, the Nguyens, and the Tyson in the 18th century. So let's call it a pod and stop here for now. In the next episode, we will focus on the 19th century, and we'll try to understand how we went from Vietnam in 1802 to French Indochina in 1889. Until then, take care and goodbye.